What else? Then there's all this other drama going on right here in Maui and the world economy, which I'm in the middle of. And
yep.
You guys might be noticing something. But what's your father saying now, Scott?
Well, you know, the market dropped pretty bad over the last couple of days.
Over the whole world?
Yeah.
Did you know why? Because as Chris Story said, the banks and the rest of the world, if you did not meet the Basel II compliance stuff by September 2nd, Tuesday, you were in trouble, and the American banks weren't doing it. So Chris Story predicts this. So this week has been terrible for the American banking system because they're not meeting the compliance.
Yeah, and now, just today, they're bailing out Fannie Mae.
Oh, is that the story today?
Yeah.
Now, on my level, that all happened 2 years ago. Everything disappeared. America's in big trouble, and my team is actually fixing the whole thing, but we're doing it through the other part of the world.
Yeah.
America is the last to be fixed. It doesn't deserve to be fixed on some level. But you're going to see this crumbling going on and on and on and on. And then there might be some local bad response, for the rest of the world, new things are being organized. Literally, the Six Counts Ten has been reorganized with the, can't tell you why, and good news, but it's working. So your father sees this, Scott. What's he say? I'll tell you this, Scott. Maybe this will help you, because we have talked about this before.
Yeah.
A friend of mine here knows a lot of wealthy people in Maui, and he said to me, every one of them says, we're in a historical situation, Ed. This has never happened before. It doesn't make any sense anymore. Which is what, you know, your father said about the guy he used to follow. And I'm the only guy on there explaining it. Of course, they're not hearing it, right?
Right.
So, and within that context, has your father said anything?
No. You know, he's just playing very conservative because that's what you need to do right now.
Yeah, that's what Ed said. None of these guys will put any money into the stock market.
Yeah.
There's no communication.
Well, yeah. I mean, if Swift is not even transferring funds internationally anymore because they can't measure what it is that they're sending.
Right.
I mean, you can't. You don't know the definition of what a dollar is anymore. What are you trading?
Right. Now, that's the way it was up till a few years ago. Then finally they said they put their hands up. So that's it. It's over. And that's what caused the credit crunch and the subprime mortgage as symptoms of it. But what you're talking about, that dilemma they had through the 90s and the early part of this decade, they finally had to give it up and start over again. And the starting over again is the historical process, a whole new thing that's going on,
right,
which I'm part of. And the Basel II compliance comes out a year or two later, this decision in Europe. That is the cover story for the fact that SWIFT is already blocked off. So it becomes a public story now. Hey, if you're not compliant with the Basel II agreements, you're out. But technically, they're already out, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Because SWIFT cut them off. So, what I like is this Sarah Palin. I think that's an amazing move by McCain. Have you looked into who she is?
Not too much.
Think of this. And Rush Limbaugh and those guys are, I got to go on this site and read what he said the day after, because he can make a lot of hay out of this. What Rush would do would say, the Democrats claim they're the most liberal, blah, 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 but they never made a woman the vice president or someone who was not part of the inside, like Geraldine Ferraro was part of the New York Mafia, blah, blah, blah. So this woman, Sarah Palin, this is probably what he's going to celebrate. She's a nobody. She's a housewife, a hockey mom, and her husband is a fisherman. And for some reason, she becomes mayor of a little nowhere place, 9,000 people. And for some reason, she got attention, so the governor or somebody in Alaska put her on an ethics committee. Maybe because she's a fundamentalist Christian, she met local politicians who are Christians in the town and wherever she's in Alaska, and then they liked her, so we'll give you this bureaucratic job. So she went after some kind of corruption. She spells this all out in her speech, which I listened to the other day and didn't know anything about her before. And I'm just repeating what she said in the speech. So she does the ethics thing, and I guess she got a high profile for that. So she ran for governor and became governor just a couple of years ago. So here's someone who's from nowhere that McCain has the wisdom to stick in there. So that Rush Limbaugh could say, look, we bring people from anywhere. They got the talent, the ability, and she's a good speaker, you know, within the political world. It was interesting watching her. She's so confident when she walked out.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like suddenly you, Scott, being fucking named vice president.
Right.
I mean, if you were an alderman in Portland and suddenly they pick you, you had to be a governor.
Yeah.
You don't realize how this is nobody.
Well, that's a chip body phenomenon.
Yes, it's a decentralized thing. For the TV. The chip effect for the TV.
Right.
Now, McCain is an outsider. He represents some old faction, and he can't rely on anybody in the Republican Party because they all hated him all the past 10 years because he went after Bush, right?
Wow.
He had to get an outsider. But the great thing is, as she said, I praised Geraldine Ferraro and Hillary, and Hillary put 18 million cracks in the glass ceiling. All you have to do is put me in, and we're done it. Put me, John McCain, in. We got a woman, vice president. Finally happened. I mean, she's even more charismatic than Obama from the women's point of view, who were pissed off that Hillary didn't get in.
Yeah.
I mean, what a perfect choice.
Well, when I first got the news, I saw it printed on the front page of the Times, and it lit me up. I thought it was a good move, but I guess I'm surrounded by a bunch of liberals because everybody I know is really pissed off and grumpy, and they're slamming her, and they just think it's the worst thing that ever happened. And I don't even think either of them have a chance of getting in there, so I don't care one way or the other. But I think
Obama's going to win.
Yeah.
It's interesting here in Maui, half the population says it's a shoe-in for Obama and the other half says McCain, but among the people I'm talking to. But the interesting thing about the new smear thing is that her baby, it was a Down syndrome baby, they're now saying is the daughter's Down syndrome.
Yeah, oh, wow.
But all you have to do is talk to...
I thought I heard that coming out like before they announced that her daughter was pregnant.
You mean a week ago, or what do you mean?
Several days, or maybe just a day or a few hours before they even leaked out that she was pregnant.
They said already that the daughter had the Down syndrome.
Yeah, my father actually sent me a link to a site that said that was a rumor.
Okay, I'm not making issue of when it was. There is a rumor. All you have to do is ask Carolyn. She says Down syndrome is caused by older women having babies.
Yeah.
And she's 44. I have a friend who was in her 40s, had a baby, and was Down syndrome. She shouldn't have done it. And so she had a Down syndrome. And so this baby was born in April. So Sarah is the magic age, 44. Remember the 44 for this decade. She's 44. There's the 8. But she had the baby earlier this year, and she shouldn't have because she got a Down syndrome. So how could the daughter have done it? And anybody could have seen that she was pregnant, the daughter, but she was pregnant with the other baby, which she just had.
Right.
You know? So obviously the daughter would not have the Down syndrome.
Well, why would...
I've heard it works the other way, too. You know, younger mothers are also likely to have high risk of having Down syndrome as babies.
Well, I'll have to ask Carolyn that. She's asleep, but she says it's usually older women.
Why would they be trying... Why would there be any cover-up or issue or confusion around whose baby it is? What difference does it make?
Yeah. But that's how desperate the Democrats to move on, whoever's doing this.
Well, the thing is that they want to convince everyone she's hypocritical because she's into all these high moral Christian fundamental values, and then her daughter has a kid out of wedlock.
Yes, but the Christian families love her because she did not abort. She let the baby be raised by the family. It's all about family.
Right. Well, that's nice if you're in a wealthy family that can afford all the care and attention that goes into raising a Down syndrome child.
Oh, they're wealthy.
But if you're living on the street from paycheck to paycheck, it might not be such a blessing to try to bring someone like that into the world.
Well, isn't the Republican Party for the richer people, the upper middle class, who have a sense of decency, supposed to want to maintain family values, even though they live in a...
But the upper middle class is disappearing, and the super wealthy are such a small minority that...
Yes, but they are a class, and they think they're responsible for the culture.
Yeah.
you know, they, and remember, there's a lot of rich, newly rich people in America.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that I think it relates to.
That don't want to be taxed.
Yeah, I remember one time Michael Shields told me that, you know, there's this magazine called Yachting, you know, and it shows all the latest, greatest yachts that the millionaires are buying and stuff. But the majority of the people who subscribe to it are middle class people who can't afford a yacht, but they dream that one day they're going to have that yacht, so they vote for the vision even though it doesn't apply to them.
Right. So we've talked about this for decades. The vision, within the rules of this presidential thing, you're presenting a value reservoir, a museum piece, and so it doesn't matter that nobody can afford a Down syndrome baby or whatever. She represents someone who's doing it right. See, that's the angle that the Republicans bank on, and it usually works because it's only for getting an image.
But it seems to me that those fundamentalist values have eroded to a large degree, but I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of...
Yeah, you in your world, you'd think that.
Yeah.
But there's always new kids being born.
Yeah.
New teenagers come in high school who are pissed off and are average Americans who want to have values, and they'll replenish the Christian thing.
Yeah. We just saw this. Max, have you seen the movie called Idiocracy?
I haven't seen it, but I have heard of it.
It's pretty funny. It's a satire on exactly what we're talking about. How the yuppie generation is dying out because they're not having children, and they're being replaced by rednecks who are having children by the truckloads.
Well, I just thought it was pretty neat that came out of left field. And McCain probably totally controls her. It was interesting. He stands beside her when she gives the talk, and his body language is odd. Since I haven't monitored this at all, I finally saw McCain, and he's standing there like an old jock. Have you noticed it, any of you, how he stands there very stiffly?
That might have something to do with his old war injuries.
Yeah, maybe that's it. And so he's standing there, and he's standing right beside her, and Carolyn says, it's like a father letting his daughter speak. And, of course, the whole thing was about how great a dad he was and how great a person. So, but that's what the vice president's supposed to do. But the women who claim that there were, that to have a woman in there is important, they prefer left-wing, maybe, woman, but she actually presented community values. She said that she, with all the oil profits over the last couple of years, she raised the taxes, got all the money, and gave it back to the people. So she's actually a communist, you know. So what is the, why wouldn't the women say, yeah, let's put this in there? But the women aren't just women. They have more than one body, and they don't like the TV image of the Republicans, right? Or, you know, the left media, sophisticated people, don't like the simple-minded image of the Republicans in the TV, so they won't support the Republican Party, even if they have a revolutionary setup.
Yeah.
So, because of the conflicting bodies. Idiocracy should not argue about the hypocrisy within body or community problems. They should show the hypocrisy of the four bodies, which is what I was trying to show, Dave.
Well, what Idiocracy shows is what happens when there's no media ecology and the chip body ends up running everything, and humans aren't even a part of the, they're not even part of the situation. Chemical bodies are just soil and green for the chip body.
Right. So he provides all these sort of point of view, critical, semi-sophisticated movies just provide evidence for my stuff, but they cannot present my stuff. It's too complex. So I have to come in and explain why Idiocracy is okay up to a point, but deficient on this, and just proving my point.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Actually, you should put it on your movie list, and then we could talk about it. I'd be interested, Bob.
Yeah. Okay. Is that available on Netflix by now?
Yeah. Oh,
okay. So there was Sarah Palin. There was Bob.
The
Carpenter.
Point that what I don't even know why you're discussing any of this. If you truly believe that the personality of the chemical body is irrelevant, that the android the president is basically the android meme is the personality of the president is simply a feature, an expression of the android meme, then what difference does it make who gets in there anyway?
Well, I agree, but the point is we juggle the four bodies. And the juggling of that is the new quadraphenic tactility. All four bodies are potent forces in the world, but it's a the juggling of them that makes everybody get scrambled. And since we're just chatting here, I'm just talking about what I found interesting this week.
Right.
It's like the old line from T.S. Eliot. I got to use words when I talk to you guys, so I got to use topical topics to talk to you guys, right? I haven't got anything else. I can't tell you that other stuff, so I'm just being hanging out in the bar here. Okay?
Yeah, but no, you're invested enthusiastically in what you're saying. It has some relevance.
No.
I'm just providing a counterpoint to see how you handle what, when I say no, it's just all an expression of the Android meme. I want to know what you think, you know, if you think, what you'll say.
Right, and you're doing that. That's good. But I don't invest anything in this. I mean, I wouldn't want anybody to be president considering what's coming.
You know, what do you mean? I thought you said you're fixing everything up and we're going to be okay.
For the rest of the world.
Uh-oh.
America will be the last fixed.
Yeah. Well, we're feeling the squeeze already. You got to be good to your friends, Bob.
I am good to you. I fucking talk to you. Conversation is the best wealth going, so I give lots of it. I give good head, good conversation.
Yeah.
Right, Max?
Right, yeah.
You better say right, Max. I just thought it was pretty neat within the normal little life of the stupid election, which I won't be voting in or not involved in. It's interesting to talk to the shock that McCain created.
Yeah.
And then you look within the cliches, he did something that was pretty commendable within the idea of being an outsider. He brought in a real outsider.
Right.
Now, the real reason is he couldn't get anybody on the inside because he's an outsider on a certain level himself. So, but that's not the way to talk about it. You say, wow, he got this little kid, the American dream. And she talked about it in her speech. She said, life is full of surprises. I mean, you know, a year ago, she never knew, unless there is a big conspiracy going on coming out of Alaska. Look up Lindsay Williams. He's one of the new Chris Story Dr. Peters. Lindsay, Lindsey. See what he said last year. He predicted all the shit, and he talked about all the oil. This is what Robin's got to listen to. All the oil off the coast of Alaska that he was part of discovering in the early 70s as a chaplain for the oil companies up there in Alaska.
Right.
They have this whole Alaska thing that he's promoting, and then they bring this woman out of Alaska. And a person told me, I think they're Jewish, but I don't know much about them. He thinks that Sarah is the Antichrist.
Well, some people think Obama's the Antichrist, so everybody's got an opinion about that.
Yeah,
the thing I wanted to mention is Obama's running around talking about change, McCain actually does it.
and that they know that. They know that'll communicate. So it was a perfect move. So I'm actually bringing her up because it's a perfect move by McCain. But you said they call Obama the Antichrist. The Antichrist is the TV body. Whoever gets prominent on the TV body would be the Antichrist, because that's the centralized image. And the TV body, the TV landscape, is only there for propping up the old centralized legacy. So centralization versus the chip body's decentralized anamorphic fractalization, that means the centralized factor of the Antichrist must be on TV. So anybody will be considered Antichrist if they get to be president.
Right.
They thought Reagan was. They thought, I don't know if they thought Clinton was, but they thought
probably don't. I mean, there are people talking now that he was, reporting like maybe some there were grandmothers or something saying that he was the Antichrist or something.
That Clinton was.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they definitely said George Bush II was the Antichrist. So, so the hidden ground here, the practical for social navigation idea, is anybody in a major position like the White House in the Android meme will be the Antichrist, because that's the function of the TV landscape. It's a centralized balance to the bland centralized balance to the chaos of the chip body. Make sense, Scott?
Yeah.
No, you're reluctant there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the TV body serves if it's the conserving image, it serves a purpose. It helps to stabilize and keeps everything from just turning into everything completely vibrating into pieces.
Right, and the yokels out there in the chip body, the sub-genies and everybody else, they think the revolution of the chip body, they're for the decentralization that it creates. So they're the Hicks out there, and somebody within that world will think the centralized is an antichrist from their own immaturity. But you're right, the tactility, the juggling of the four bodies is the new ecology.
Right.
And I remember once reading that a peasant in Spain was talking to a journalist, and he said, well, the antichrist is in Madrid. Madrid is the antichrist. Now, that's an agricultural peasant who would say they're a Christian reading the Bible and talking about the antichrist. From his point of view, anybody in a big city is the antichrist, right? From his narrow little chemical body historical perspective.
Well, the antichrist foretells the apocalypse, right?
No, Armageddon.
Oh, the Armageddon. But we've already been through successive Armageddons anyway, so what's another one anyway?
That's right. And the apocalypse is the revelation. Apocalypse means no secrets.
Mm.
So people mixed up apocalypse and Armageddon.
Oh, okay. No, you're the apocalypse.
Yes, I'm the apocalypse. Not the Armageddon, though. I'll take that on if they need it.
Now I know why you used to say that they'd ask you your thing, and you'd say, no, I'm apocalyptic.
Yeah, Paul McLuhan. He said, I'm neither pessimistic or optimistic, I'm apocalyptic.
Oh.
It's a great phrase, and he was apocalyptic.
Right.
He revealed a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I refined that. Right, Max? You agree with that, right, Max?
Yeah.
If you don't agree with it, Max, we're going to have to cut you out of this conversation. So, Max, you haven't had a talk with me for a month or so. You miss it?
There's that option, sir, but I'm dealing with it pretty well.
What did you say? What was the first sentence? You what?
I do notice the absence, but I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah, that's the disservice of me talking to you over this summer. I'm now part of your organism, so you notice it's gone. Before, it wasn't there, so you didn't notice it was not there.
But, sometimes I have other feelings about things like that, so it's kind of minimal.
Yeah, the other feelings being... You're glad I'm not talking?
That same kind of phenomenon. Sometimes it happens with other things, you know. So
yes,
It's archetype by now, I guess.
Yeah, no, and that's what experience is. It's, the tetrad is the psychological cognitive process as well as the sociological process. Right now, I'm thinking of what I'm going to say next, which obsolescence is something that I don't want to talk about or I forgot. But if I bring up something new, it'll retrieve another memory from Scott or you, and then it'll flip into Max ranting about something. But
yeah.
I started it by bringing up a new topic. That's a tetrad. It happens in conversation.
Yeah.
And it's a circle. I was thinking about the other day how if you're in a circle, you're in the center circle, what you extend is in front of you, then it moves around and it goes behind you and you can't see it if you don't look. And so that's the obsolescence thing. Then it comes around on your right side, reappears as it's moving along the circle. But now it's a different form, so it's actually gone around behind and gone to another level like a spiral and come back on a different loop, so it's different. And then it flips into its opposite, which I guess would be the end of the circle.
Yeah. I kind of get it. In the ignorance that implies impression that nits knowledge that finds a name for, then what's the wits that convey context that sweetens sensation that drives desire that adheres to attachment that dogs death that bitches birth that entails the ensuance of an existentiality.
Yeah, that's the tetra.
Where are you reading that from, Max?
Page 18 of Finnegan's
Fat Communion.
No, and it's page 18 of Finnegan's Wake.
Yep.
I think it's page 18?
I'm reading it from McLuhan quotes that in a cliched archetype. Joy sets up the chain of cognition and recognition itself.
Right. It's fantastic. And so you can take that, if you see that, and then you can see that Joyce arranged the whole book in a tetradic format on the big scale.
Yeah.
Which comes into another thing. If you take the sine wave and basic human existence is pain and pleasure or contraction and release or blocking and merging. You tighten up and then you release. So that basic rhythm, think of it as a sine wave going up and then down the trough, into the trough. So you have on one scale the fact you eat and then get hungry. Then you do the sine wave on a bigger scale, maybe over a 500-year process, and you see a cycle there of what goes up and what goes down. Like the American beater used to say, usually a wealthy family will go for about three generations and then fall off. So there's a cycle. So now if you have the 90-year cycle happening and in a daily cycle of hunger and all these little sine waves are overlapping, in the middle of it, you'd see a 22 repeating. And the art would be to figure out what size is a sine wave that 22 shows up as it synchronizes with other local events, which are local sine waves. You follow me? The overlapping.
Now that you ask me, I can't say I do.
Right. Okay. It's like a moiré, which is an overlaying of images. Are you listening, Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you think of smaller timescale sine waves, or the basic up down, or extension and release. I mean, the basic thing is you feel hungry, then it's satisfied, or you feel tense, and then you feel relieved. So that in and out or up and down dialectic, that is the Krishnamurti pattern, the William Irwin Thompson pattern, fight or flight in the amoeba or the cell. So a basic in-out thing, think of that as a sine wave going up and down.
Well, that's not quite accurate about the Thompson reference to the cell. It's not the fight or flight thing that he talked about. It's the attraction and repulsion. He's either attracted to nourishment or it's repelled from toxins.
Okay, yeah. So that in and out or yes-no thing, okay? So that make that a sine wave. Then say that archetypal in-out, put it on bigger time scales. So that if I see a 22 keep showing up in certain events, I might be seeing a sine wave, a 1,000-year sine wave, which evokes the 22 or something, and it overlaps with me reading, hearing news events, and the 22 number shows up. There may be a crisscrossing of the sine waves. That's about the best I can say. And as I thought of this, I said, this is what Bowert meant when he told me through James and May that my stuff is going to get so complex, it's going to be ridiculous. Well, I just realized this sine wave thing is a new aspect of putting complexity into it.
I thought he said it already was too complex, and you need to figure out how to simplify the language for people.
He said that, yeah, he said that. But I'd have to think back. He did tell me it'd be complex, and he said it would get complex.
Well, I think he said you needed to re-engineer some of the language around what it is you're attempting to communicate.
Right. So how do you know that? Did James say that?
No, I think that you said that to me, like when we were in L.A. right after you talked to Bowert.
Oh, yeah, right. So maybe, yeah, that's the problem. That's what I got to figure out, how to make it simple.
Yeah. Or it's taken me several years to even begin to relate to the idea of, say, a chip body and a TV body.
And that's, I would call that the simple version.
And I'm wondering if there's a way to re-engineer those terms that'll be more perceptively obvious to people, or if people are just going to have to get used to those terms and realize that they already accurately express what you're attempting to communicate.
Right. Well, you create terms or jargon. That's a metaphor. That's a medium. That numbs people. So you always lose, even if you create terms, because people will start using them habitually and miss the interesting aspect of it or the epiphanies. So you got to create new terms so you wake them up again. So that's what McLuhan said. He said the hot and cool of understanding media, he said, was obsolete within 6 months. And he said that was a mistake. And so he was trying to come up with other terms, and he did, like cliche and archetype. He was aware that the jargon starts to numb people. If McLuhan becomes McLuhanism and people are talking about the means and message, they're coming stupid again. So McLuhan has to become the opposite and do something different to shock them. Now, that's why, and Scott, you've seen it. You've both seen the ear map heraldry sign, you know, me with the Thompson, Croker, and McLuhan and LaRouche. You know, you've seen that, Scott. I sent it to you a couple of weeks ago, and then ear map finally completed, and all he did was make my part, I looked a little smaller or further back distance. But there's the basic thing. I have to jump from McLuhan to the opposite, LaRouche, to back to Zappa, or to Joyce, or to Thompson, and that. That's what you're doing. That's speeding up the changing of your jargon because people get stuck in one mode.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I don't take it too seriously if people don't understand me. They might understand something else.
Yeah. Well,
trying to get them to get excited a bit.
Right.
To get their mind going. So you got to have all kinds of techniques.
Or, right.
Right? Right. You agree with that, Max?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think I've been kind of numb myself.
In what sense?
Numb
to my stuff.
Yeah, it's all archetype by this point.
Right, and so Kigye kind of noticed that, or we don't know how much he knows, but he could ride with the idea. You're numbed by Deanism.
That's what he's saying. He posted a few of his conversations with Elaine on his blog recently.
With Elaine?
Yeah, Elaine, yeah.
He's back with her? He's talking to her again.
Yeah.
Okay, and they talk about you? What?
Or he's been talking to her for a while still.
Okay, so did he critique you to Elaine?
Yeah, he did. Let me see if I can bring up the entry.
Mention, I know this because just one little sample, he did mention your failure, your flaw on all Slack. Because he's bugging the hell out of those guys. He's putting his long posts on all Slack twice a day now.
Yeah.
Which is funny, which is great. And, of course, half of them think it's me, or the other half think it's him working on my behalf, bugging them, and the rest just think he's an idiot. So, but the thing is, he does mention he's more blatant about putting you down because you don't talk to him anymore, you know. Unless you do talk to him, but you weren't. So, Scott.
Yeah, I stopped talking to him a few weeks ago. What he's doing, I couldn't, I didn't think it was worth it, that sort of thing, and, going back to school in a few weeks.
Yeah. No, you didn't need that. I mean, for a young mind like yours, he has a lot of interesting information for you to read. You know, that was good for a year or two.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't lead anywhere, so you have to drop it. But the thing is that you become an expert on Bob's stuff. And, you know, you're praised for posting it on Five Bodies, praised by me. But, yes. You're becoming too good at it, or too knowledgeable, and you might lose the innocence or the spark of it.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
Yeah, so that's why I don't mind if anybody learns anything. It's almost like Zappa once said, they said, some mother came up to him and said, my kid, you know, loves your music, and went on about how much the kid loved his music, and Frank says, well, I hope I'm not interrupting his life too much, which is a good ecological response. And we can do that under the electric speed-up environment because all information is obsolete, so you keep turning it over. And you don't want to get anybody stuck in the information because the information is transient and obsolete deeply. So, that's Frank. He could never have said that, I don't think, 100 years ago. He would need all the help. But So where you can see how people are, in general, a lot more sophisticated. The problem is they're not aware of what's made them more sophisticated. And then you talk about, well, what's the value of knowing that? I'm willing to have that question. And that's what's good about Bob Carr book. Scott, Max read the Bob Carr book already.
Cool. You got anything to say about that, Max? Tell me what you think.
What we just went over, kind of, you can almost see that in what he's writing about, you know.
What we were just talking about. He does it within the religious guru world.
Yeah.
Well, Max, what is, since I haven't read the book, and we talked with Worcester about Krishnamurti's charisma. I don't know, because I haven't looked into it, what the charisma is of the anti-Krishnamurti or the UG Krishnamurti. How does that fit into Bob Carr's cosmology?
Well, basically, he found Krishnamurti first, but then he got numb to it.
And he needed that kick in the ass about Krishnamurti, and this guy was the perfect guy because he was a devotee of Krishnamurti himself and then had the guts to tell him off. And there's some great anecdotes of the interaction of the two of them are incredible.
Yeah, right. But the calamity he had in the mid to late 70s when...
Happened in 67, and I discussed this with Bob Carr on Thursday, trying to relate to the Rai concept, which he knows nothing about. He doesn't know that much about Worcester Shanley. And so I told Bob Carr that Yuji Krishnamurti got the post-riot insight, because his whole message is that thought, culture, and the sages and the religions and the wisest guy and the wisest people in history have been a fuck-up. And that's exactly what riot is, as said by Cosmic Awareness. So he's actually expressed, he's a guy who directly responded to riot, to the death of riot.
But didn't Krishnamurti do that? How does this anti-Krishnamurti augment what Krishnamurti did?
When you say, you went, didn't Krishnamurti do that? Don't you hear me immediately begin to speak to you? Don't run off with some more words. You don't hear it. You don't hear me start.
Yeah, I know, but you wouldn't let me express my complete thing that I'm probing you, Bob, and you won't let me get the whole fucking probe out.
Yes, because I want to respond to the first sentence, which is, you should be, when I was on the radio, if I said something, as soon as I heard someone wanted to interrupt me, I'd stop, because I want the other person to fill in the time as much as possible. So you should be aware of me wanting to help you do it, rather than just trying to say your question so exactly.
Well, what should I do with my frustration if I'm trying to get to something with you, and you're gonna interrupt me halfway into it?
You want to be interrupted. When I was doing the radio show on CKLN, I would hope that they would interrupt me so that I wouldn't have to keep talking and making up bullshit. So the thing is, you listen real intense to see if the person's their energy comes through on the phone. He's ready to say that. So I stop. I don't care if I get my point not complete, because he's already going to respond and say something. So I'm saying that I want to respond to your first point.
Yeah, and I'm saying I want equal time here. You're dominating the whole goddamn conversation, and I can't even fucking interrupt to get my fucking probe in.
I'm not dominating. If you look at the Krishnamurti tapes, he wants you to listen. I'm just the guy providing the language. I'm listening to myself. I'm not trying to get my stuff heard. I just wanted to simulate a response, and you started to respond, and you should hear the response. So you shouldn't want to be dominating. Well, dominating is stupid. To hog the microphone for 30 or 2 minutes is stupid. I would just hog it until someone started to say something. I don't care what they say. They were going to respond, and I can stop. And it's
anyway, address my point. Tell me what my fucking point was. I don't even think you know what I was asking, because you wouldn't let me finish.
No, I got enough from the first sentence, which I've forgotten. So, Max, what was the first sentence that was spoken? Why was Krishnamurti not anti-Rye? Okay? That's how you began.
I suggested that Krishnamurti was expressing the anti-Rye sentimentality, and I wanted to know why we even need a UG Krishnamurti. How does he do it better?
Because Krishnamurti, being the last sage, correcting the whole Rye process and pointing out that it was a Rye or a separateness and irrelevant, that very insight is just another insight, according to UG Krishnamurti. And so you have to have the anti-environment to the guy who had the last word. So, yes, Krishnamurti became an institution, and he didn't like that either. I mean, he cleared up the thing, but the explanation of how he cleared it up became an institution and a bunch of metaphors that numbed his followers. So you needed UG to totally cancel that. They work as an ecology. And Bob Carr told me that UG told him near before he died, he said, guess what, the old man came to see me. And that was UG's term for Jiddu Krishnamurti. And he says, the old man, this will be before 1986. Krishnamurti dies in February 86. So he says, he came to me, he says, you're going too far, UG. Tone it down. The people can't take it. You're going too far. So UG tells, maybe there was more details than that, but he tells Bob Carr this, and he's sort of making fun of Jiddu Krishnamurti for being the establishment, saying, hey, cool it. So UG liked that he forced the old man to become straight, the status quo. But you get my point? Krishnamurti created an environment of a message, but then it numbed people, so you needed a UG to cancel out UG's message. And then UG did his damnedest when you read the book to cancel out his own message. Right, Max?
Yep.
Yeah, UG is an interesting character. If you don't know about him, to read that book is worthwhile reading about a guy who was doing what he was doing, right?
Yeah.
And you can go on the YouTube and see him, his last lectures, last talks. He's dying. He's lying on a couch.
Yeah.
And have you watched some of those?
Yeah, I've watched those before. I remember reading about UG, like, before he even You even heard of him?
You found out on your own about him.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, who told you that?
I looked it up myself. I mean, I was just looking at, I was just looking up stuff on Jiddu Krishnamurti, then
you found
him. Pops up.
Right, and that's like a year ago or something.
Yeah, a year ago, or maybe maybe earlier this year. I'm not sure.
So you're starting to get into Bob Zanocker. You're picking up the agenda for 2008 before it happened. The effects preceding the causes. So
Bob, hold on a second. I want to ask Max a question. And don't interrupt him. Let him finish.
Yeah, but you're moving to another area. We'll get to that. Let's finish.
I'm not moving to another area.
Okay. Bob Carr said that, you know, you see him on the YouTube, and he's dying, and he's telling these people to go fuck off. Get the hell out of there. Well, Bob Carr told me that for a long period before he died, I don't know, let's say 8 months or a year, he knew he was dying. He said, I've already gone. UG is not here. He kept telling the people, UG is dead, gone. And he did for like 6 months before he actually died.
That sounds like Captain Beefheart. I'm not here. I only hang around for my friends.
Good point. Beefheart was miming something in the culture world. Okay, now you can speak, Scott.
No, well, Max, do you feel, here's a two-part question, do you feel that UG Krishnamurti successfully was some type of an anti-environment to Jiddu Krishnamurti, and was he successful, and if so, how did he cancel Krishnamurti? What did he do?
Well, you give without. Let me just interrupt. Without getting, you don't want to give him the great punchline that happens when Krishnamurti dies. It's an incredible story, and the first Krishnamurti, and you don't want to give the other story. So without giving the stories, because there's a good.
Why not, Bob? Why not give me the punchline first, and then let me?
You got to go through the process.
Oh no! You remember what Poe said? Poetry, or LaRouche agreed with him. Poetry begins with the punchline, and then you unravel it from there.
We've given you the punchline. We've talked about it for 10 minutes. You now have to do the unraveling, work through the effects. So back to Max. So answer the questions or whatever. What are you going to say? Was he in any environment to Krishnamurti?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm just thinking of that because of all the people that came to see him and freaking out. You read the story of the guy he invited to see UG, then he saw him, then he just they just keep going back and forth, and finally just ran away.
Yeah, UG had this, and Bob Carr keeps telling me this, he had an incredible animal projection. He was a mutant, and he just affected people like LSD through his human vibration.
Mm.
Like me. He's like me, Scott. I told Bob Carr that when I read about UG in his book, and I didn't know about him before, I said he was a combination of me and Worcester. Worcester in the private world, me in the public world.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, your second question was, Scott, like, how did he do it? Or
well, no, I just want to ask Max. Did you did reading that story, Bob Carr's story about the two Krishnamurtis, did it resolve anything for you, or anything that you had already been thinking about that was that needed to be resolved?
I don't know. If so, then it wasn't too shattering for me.
That's right, and that's exactly Bob Carr's thing. All the way through the book, even when he was a young medium, he's going, should I be doing this? I don't know. He had a hypersensitivity about imposing on people. And then when he read Krishnamurti, that refined it, so he knew how to articulate it. Then he got UG's message, and even at the end of the book, he runs from UG. He tries to put down UG. He says, we don't know nothing. And talking to Bob Carr, he's still saying that stuff to me. So he admits that he didn't get anything out of it all. On Amazon.com, there's a review, one review of the book, and the guy says, this book is amazing. It's about a lonely American who goes through the spiritual journey all through his life, and he's lonely, and he's honest, and he never finds out any answers.
Yeah, I would call him a 21st century Siddhartha.
No, that's Mahesh Bhatt.
Yeah, but he also says lonely American.
Hey, I wonder if he wrote. I didn't realize that. Yeah. So, and the back of the book, Mahesh Bhatt, a famous Indian film director, says,
yeah,
yes, but. but the go to the review. Maybe the review. Maybe the review is a quote from the foreword, which is written by Mahesh.
Yeah, maybe he posted it.
Yeah, maybe he posted it. I hadn't thought of that. The thing is that it seemed to me it was. But he says. The point is that you. It's interesting. This guy never finds an answer. Now, there's not many people in the New Age world who admit they didn't find anything.
Well, you know what? I just watched a documentary on Joseph Campbell, and Campbell realized that very thing. He said that the problem, the pitfall of a myth. He said a myth, like for instance, God is a myth that's totally incomprehensible and can't even be talked about. But as soon as it's evoked as formalized as a myth, then people either identify with the myth and believe in God, or they disengage from the myth and become atheists. And so the myth is a disservice to both people because people fall on one side or the other and make up their mind. But the true function of the myth is to keep you focused in the mystery.
Right, and the myth is like any medium. Remember, McLuhan defined media as myth, modern myth. So a myth is a medium. Speech creates myth. That's the point. It has a service and a disservice.
Right, and in a sense, I guess maybe you could say Thompson sort of transcends that because he went through the New Age gauntlet himself.
Yeah, and then he sort of started to move towards McLuhan.
Yeah.
Even though he went to the New Age in reaction against McLuhan, he came back through McLuhan thanks to me because I returned him on to McLuhan in 93 in New York City. And then he talks about McLuhan a lot in his later books in the last bit. But, you know, Max said to me after telling me he read the book, he says, I can see, Bob, that he belongs in the Thompson Quadrant.
Yeah.
that Bob Carr and, I guess Bob Carr and UG, right? The whole gang of them. But it is a unique New Age book because he exposes all the older people. He even knows who Bubba Free John is, the history
right.
of him. He knew him personally. He exposes Andrew Cohen, all the new guys.
Mm.
And he's still over there now doing it. And now he's met Dobbs. And that is it. I would have loved to have taped all the stuff we've said so far. And I called Dave after on Thursday and told him what we've been saying. Dave was laughing his head off every 15 minutes at all the stuff we said, or what I told him we did.
Right.
But now we get those two guys together. It'll be interesting because they are, in a sense, Carr is to Dave as UG is to Krishnamurti, but Carr doesn't know that Dave is a UG back to Carr. So I tried to tell this to Carr that Dave rejected his consciousness, his mediumship and this and that, and he doesn't do anything about it, blah, blah, blah. I made him sound just like UG, and so Bob said, well, I nod my hat to Dave. What is it? I give my hat's off to Dave. And so when I told Dave that Bob said that Dave was delighted because there's an ancient rivalry between them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and Bob was not up on what had happened to Dave. So Bob calls me every night, Skypes me, says, hey, let's keep talking, because it's his own life that I'm replaying back to him.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the real byproduct.
So Bob, so Carr discovers the Krishnamurti, then the anti-Krishnamurti, then they merge, the left and right hemispheres merge, and who does he contact next? Bob Dobbs!
Yeah. Who met him 40 years ago.
He's in the Corpus Callosum now, Bob.
That's right. That's the new hidden ground here, the Corpus Callosum. But he, what was I going to say? So he keeps calling me every night. Oh, yeah. So I told Dave that he loves remembering all these things. So Dave laughed because Dave knows I've been doing that to him for 22 years, you know, for a long time. He values my reminding him. And then you haven't heard, have you heard all the Worcester stuff, Max?
Yeah, I've heard everything up there. The fourth conversation, I guess. That's the last one I've heard.
Yeah.
Let me just interrupt and ask, Max, did you listen to the talks that Bob and I did on the Fatic Communion book?
Oh, yeah. I have listened to the whole thing.
Oh, cool. Well, that's...
Max is the only one who's listened to everything, the most of anybody.
Wow.
He did bog down a Gerd Stern. He finds that not so exciting.
Yeah.
But you gotta go back to it. Gerd rambles. That's good material for someone that wants to do research and write a book.
Yes. Yeah. But Max is young. He's looking for the answer, so he's going to get to go for the intense guys. Now we're throwing all these guys, these old guys, there's no answer, Max. Fuck, dude, you're on your own, Max.
Yeah, I realize that. It's okay.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I'm the only guy saying the Android meme is doing UG Krishnamurti consciously to everybody.
Yeah.
And that's what we can't help. This whole question of mystery has been squared. Now, that's the... how do you talk about that?
Well, your value comes in, Bob, is that we all become entranced and hypnotized by the environment. And you point the environment out and allow us to stand in the gap, in the gap, you know, and then, like you say, juggle the four bodies.
Right.
Nobody's talking about that.
I know, and I sophisticate. So when you can describe to yourself where you're at and what you're not fooled by, I then say, oh, wait a minute, you're fooled by this hidden environment. So I'm peeling the layers of the onion and the complexity of this multi-levered Android mean matrix oven onion. That's the value. I'll keep you waking up.
Right.
You know, the environment is not repeating the wake-up. It's like, oh, we got to wake up to this now. It's meta. But so, and David's like that. Dave's pretty good. Bob Kerr's like that in his book, within the simple English language. But the...
Dave doesn't have any tolerance for, like, for instance, your chart and the stuff that he wouldn't identify with. He has no tolerance for when you start talking about the four bodies, the media ecology, any of that stuff.
Talk about the evergreens. Dave does not live in thought. That's why he's like UG Krishnamurti. You can't communicate with him. When you read the book, Bob Carr is totally frustrated with UG. Like, there's no point in continuing to talk to him. He's just going to keep saying the same thing to you. Go away. And Bob Carr, all the way through the book, once he meets UG, says, what the fuck am I doing with this guy? But he keeps staying. And he's probably glad he died. But now, Bob Carr, we're making Bob Carr famous. You know, we're bringing him out of it. So we're talking about his media image, which he didn't even know he had. And, you know, and Worcester's published and talking about it. So what was I going to say? So Worcester, he...
Now, Worcester trusts you, because I remember at the end of the Eben Ray show, she said, we want to bring you back on. And he said, well, I don't know if I... Because I'll leave that up to Bob. I trust Bob. So he trusts you, but he doesn't get you at all. He doesn't know Bob. He doesn't know what Bob Dobbs is.
But you have to use the chart.
He probably sees you as a student of his, right?
He thinks I'm a young kid. He doesn't know I'm 86. He doesn't know I'm older than him. He doesn't believe that.
Mm-hmm. Well, nobody does, Bob.
Well, me and Carol do because of the fact, and a few other people. You don't know those people. But, yeah, you guys don't. How could you know? And get it certified for yourself. You're never fucking going to get certified until you go to the Akashic Records when you die and see what happened, right? But Worcester, there was a point. Worcester says, he's loving. Oh, yeah, so Worcester's celebrating. He's laughing because I'm putting Bob Carr through the Worcester process that I put Worcester through. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so he, from his point of view, knows that Carr is just beginning the Bob processing, right? Because Worcester's been doing it for 25 years. And so I brought up, did you hear all the shows, or all of Worcester? Because in the last one, you heard him go into that recall and read that poem he wrote 50 years ago. After that, you know what I mean, that poem? You heard that, right, Max?
Yeah, I heard it. I don't recall it all, but
he wrote this poem in acid, and then 2 years later he was with somebody in 1960, some woman, and he suddenly remembered it. Well, he did it. And after the taping, Scott says, he read that. I said, no, he didn't read it, but let's call him. So we called him up. He said, oh, I didn't read that. I don't have any of that written down anymore. I went into a semi-channeled unconscious mediumship, and he calls it recall.
Yeah, he said he almost made it sound like he has, it's almost like he didn't say remote viewing, but it's almost like the ability to jump back on the time track. Because he said when I went back to the recall of the doing the poetry, I was in the space that I was in. I could see the books on the bookshelf. I was there.
Yeah, is that on the tape? Do you remember Max hearing that part?
Which part?
Where he's describing to Scott and answering it that he was there. No, that was after. That was after the taping,
that
right?
That was after,
called him back, right.
Right.
Anyways, the...